Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here is Mordecai Breenberg.
When we think of regime change and foreign occupation and orchestrated elections to legitimate these interventions, the villain that first comes to mind is the USA. It's easier to point a finger at that mammoth imperial power than to point a finger at our own government in Ottawa. Yet when it comes to Haiti, the government of Canada has been a player in the overthrow of the previous elected government of Jean-Bertrand Aristide. It continues to play an important part in the current foreign occupation of Haiti under cover of the United Nations, and Ottawa intends to contribute importantly to an upcoming election process whose goal is to legitimate the coup of February 29, 2004. To discuss the current situation in Haiti and the role of the Canadian government, I'm joined in the studio by Kevin Pinna. He's resident in Haiti since 1989. He's an independent journalist and filmmaker. He is one of the very few voices providing reports not tailored to fit the imperial agenda. He works in an environment that poses great dangers to himself because of that independence of opinion. It's a pleasure to meet you, Kevin. Welcome to Red Eye.
Thank you, Mordecai. And I want to say how wonderful it is to be able to come to Co-op Radio. I think it's 30 years old now.
Yeah.
Is that right? And what an amazing community resource. People in this community, I want to encourage them to cherish Co-op Radio. This is an important voice in the community.
Well, thank you very much. I think our kind of perspective and the work that you do really are complementary.
Thank you.
Let's start with The situation right now in Haiti. If a person had been a supporter of the programs and outlook of the Jean-Bertrand Aristide government, what's their daily predicament today?
They would be more than likely in hiding, or they would be dead. They might be in jail. Certainly life would not be normal for them, particularly if they were perceived as being in any sort of leadership role. And a leadership role could be something as benign as having been part of the literacy program. The literacy program was a universal literacy program that Jean-Bertrand Aristide's government put into effect so that all adults between the ages of 30 to 60 could have free literacy classes every day in the afternoon. It could be something as benign as that, or it could have been organizing a rally, or it could have been participating in the leadership of a picket. Any number of those things would put you on a list, would run you afoul of the current U.S.-installed government. Your name could have been called out on a local radio station run by the elite at 4 o'clock, which they do every afternoon, on a station called Kiskaya. Sometimes people only find out that they're supposed to go into hiding by listening to that show, and a woman named Lillian Pierre-Paul, who just spews invectives, language that's meant to create a climate of a witch hunt against members of La Valasse, which was Jean-Bertrand Aristide's political party. It really is an atmosphere, a witch hunt climate, and an atmosphere of terror. And imagine what it's like to have to go into hiding, not have a job, be running from the police, and worrying about how you're going to feed your family.
Who are these people in the sense of the background? I mean, the coup installed a new president, Tocqueville is his name, is that right?
That's a prime minister.
Prime minister. And the police force now of Haiti, which is committing the pursuits, killing people, etc., which has been documented recently in a report from the Human Rights Center.
Tom Griffin in Miami.
In Miami.
University, yes.
So who are these people who are, where do they come from politically? What's their history that are the force of repression today in Haiti?
Well, you know, some of them were intellectual right, some of them were intellectual left, who I consider, it's funny when someone on the intellectual left supports a coup of this nature, sometimes they become the most the deadliest in a way, because it's like they have a greater axe to grind, because they have to prove more as to why they would, given that they perceive themselves as somehow on the left or progressive, they somehow have to be, they have to prove more why they were forced to take this position. And then, of course, you're right, there's the former military in the guise of Guy Philippe and Ravix Remsenth. There's the right, which is the traditional oligarchy and the elite in the form of Andy Appeld and the Group 184, although they claim to represent civil society organizations. You can see that it is a veritable laundry list of Haitian so-called grassroots organizations that were funded by the United States Agency for International Development, that were funded by the Canadian International Development Agency, that were funded by the French Foreign Ministry, basically helping to create the opposition that helped to call for Jean-Bertrand Aristide's resignation, that added the veneer of legitimacy of this being a popular movement to unseat an unpopular president.
The you mentioned the soldiers or the army, because Aristide dissolved the army. It had been one of, under the Duvalier dictatorships, the most brutal and gruesome folks. Are these folks then returned now to assume roles in the what's now called the police as opposed to the army?
Absolutely, under Canadian tutelage as well, because it's the RCMP who are overseeing the training and assistance program for the Police Nationale d'Haïti, the PNH. And yes, now the high command of the Haitian National Police is a list of the high former high command, people who would have been in the former high command of the former military. So although they may call it the police, its leadership is the former military, the former brutal military. And this has been a conscious campaign, because they know that they can't open the ranks of the police to normal recruitment, because the majority of the population, who are the majority of the poor, still continue to support Lavalas. And, of course, that would create a whole other circumstance that they don't want to have to deal with. But the way they are dealing with the calls, the continuing calls, in the poor neighborhoods like Bel Air and Cité Soleil and Delmadur and Village des Deux and Cité des Deux, is that the United Nations sort of is there to ensure that there is no armed resistance. Right? Any armed resistance, any communities that say that they're going to defend themselves by virtue of arms, the United Nations goes into those communities, they disarm them, they break up any resistance, and then they step back, and the Haitian National Police come in with SEMO, which are special units, and the SWAT teams, the special tactical units of the Haitian police. And what they do is they do these dragnets in these poor communities where Aristide's support is great, where they're still calling for his return. They take all the young men off the streets. If they're lucky, they're arbitrarily arrested. In a lot of instances, they are simply laid down, face down, on the ground, and summarily executed. And these types of incidents are becoming more frequent and are becoming the norm rather than the aberration at this point. And so while the RCMP in Canada and Paul Martin and Pierre Pettigrew brag about their role in training the Haitian police, when they commit these awful, heinous massacres, when they commit human rights violations, those same people are conspicuously silent. Or they say there is no proof of human rights violations in Haiti. And they wash their hands in a Pontius Pilate-like way of any responsibility for what their trainees are doing with what skills they're supposedly providing them. To me, that's the height of hypocrisy. You can't say you're training the Haitian police and then wash your hands of responsibility for human rights violations they commit.
The Canadian government was involved. You've mentioned a little bit about the destabilization program prior to the coup being actually implemented. Then it's involved now with the United Nations as a front for legitimating these police repressive acts. What else is the Canadian government involved in and that's upcoming that we should be aware of and understand the dynamic?
Well, really, the primary role for what they call reformation of the Haitian political system, what I call social engineering of the Haitian political system, because really what I see this is a way of legitimizing the coup of February 29th and consolidating the coup to ensure that Lavalas cannot come back to power, to ensure that the voices that are calling for Jean-Bertrand Aristide's return will be silenced. They are also overseeing the so-called reform of the judiciary in Haiti. That's heavily funded by CEDA, as I said earlier, the Canadian International Development Agency. Yes, but at the same time, there are the Peace and Justice Commission of the Catholic Church in Port-au-Prince said that there are 700 political prisoners in the capital alone. There are judges who have actually given orders to release some of those prisoners to the Ministry of Justice and to the government prosecutor, Daniel Audain. The Minister of Justice, Bernard Goose, and Daniel Audain stand in violation of those court orders because they refuse to enforce them. And for one reason and one reason only, these are leaders of Lavalas, of the majority political party. Yet Canada is, in theory, overseeing the reform of the same judiciary that stands in violation today of these court orders to release political prisoners. Yet Mr. Martin has the nerve to say there are no political prisoners in Haiti, while they know definitely that they are the ones who are overseeing that process and are intimately involved in it. It's disingenuous and it's hypocrisy, clear and simple. Now, not only the judicial reform, but also electoral reform. CEDA has been involved in rewriting the electoral laws that are going to govern Haiti's next elections. And they have been described by some consultants within CEDA as draconian. Draconian why? Because it basically constitutes mandatory election. If you don't vote in these next elections, you are in fear of reprisal. If you don't have that election stamp and your election card, you can live in fear of reprisal. Also, you can't get a carte d'identité, which is a national ID card, which means that you can't get a driver's license, you can't get a bank account, you can't participate in normal social life without participating in those elections. And there's a good reason they're doing that, because their biggest fear right now is that they won't have those long lines at the polls to legitimize what was essentially a coup d'etat February 29, 2004.
And the party of Aristide is planning to boycott these as fraudulent elections, so people would have no one to vote for except the coup d'etat folks.
Exactly, and there's talk now of Lavalas actually organizing demonstrations on the day of the elections, and that would be a tremendous embarrassment for the Bush administration and the Martin administration, because what it means is on the day when they're trying to set up those photo opportunities for the clicking and the whirring of the long line, you know, those photo ops of the long lines at the polls that we saw in Iraq, and instead there are thousands of people in the streets protesting against the legitimacy of the elections while those same cameras are whirring and clicking. This could be potentially a huge embarrassment for them, and they know it. And I think that's one of the other reasons that you've seen the political repression against Lavalas escalate dramatically over the last few months. All of this is trying to prepare the groundwork for those photo ops so that they can say that those upcoming elections in Haiti are legitimate. They desperately need that image.
I know you're living in Haiti, working in Haiti, so to ask you about how the Canadian media approaches the realities of Haiti. Do you have any comment on that, given you're living in another country?
I was aghast to see Marina Jimenez's article on February the 7th, where she basically...
Where was that?
In the Globe and Mail.
Globe and Mail, okay.
Where she defined a term, a Haitian term called maonage, as meaning obscuring reality, when in fact her defining it as obscuring reality was obscuring reality. The truth is maonage, the root of it comes from slaves who escaped from the masters and were in hiding from the French slave masters. The Maon were communities of slaves, of escaped slaves, in hiding. So for her to define the term Maonage as obscuring reality, to then lead into a quote by an RCMP saying that Haiti is so full of smoke and mirrors that we can't ascertain the truth about human rights violations, I mean, how much more blatant can you get in terms of manipulating the truth in that? Marina, please, darling, we're not stupid.
In the situation now of the the coup, the occupation under the UN guidance. There's growing mobilization of people who are becoming increasingly aware. You've been traveling across Canada. How would you comment on the character of the solidarity movement with the Haitian people's demand to have the independence that they first seized in the slave revolts the early part of the 1800s?
Well, I think that reality is finally catching up with, or is holding its own now against the big lies. Finally, there's been so much repression and so much killing in Haiti since February 29th, that it's been impossible for them to continue to hide it. And we're beginning to see really serious human rights investigation work being done independently, unfortunately, because Amnesty International does not have a crew, a team on the ground in Haiti. Amnesty International does not devote much of its attention or its budget to the situation, to human rights concerns in Haiti. Neither does Human Rights Watch. And you've got to also remember that these two venerable human rights organizations certainly would scream to the rafters whenever there was a perceived or alleged violation of human rights by the Aristide administration when it was in power. Now they are almost conspicuously silent. Amnesty has said a few things, but again, Amnesty has never sent a team on the ground to do a serious human rights investigation in Haiti. Despite that, there have been independent efforts, such as the one that you cited earlier by Tom Griffin and the University of Miami, where people with their own resources, because they know that this is going on, with their own concerns, have done independent human rights investigations, serious investigations, that have now revealed to us that really we had the wool pulled over our eyes. Really, the way in which the media and our own governments manipulated the reality of Haiti, it was a lie. Really, we bought a big lie. And now that big lie is starting to unravel. And I think that that's reflected in the crowds and the audiences and the attention that we've gotten while we've been here in Canada. In Montreal, we had over 500 students in the Concordia University. In Ottawa, we had about 300 people at a community center. In Victoria, it was their first Haiti event, very well attended, between 60 to 80 people. Last night, we packed the auditorium at
SFU,
mm-hmm. Right? And so I think that people are finally beginning to wake up and understand what has been going on in their name, and that there's a whole other side to the story that has been withheld from them. And I've heard people say, you know, if I only knew this before, I would have spoken out earlier. And I think that people are somewhat angry when they understand exactly how they've been manipulated.
Well, thanks for giving us some of the other side, which you continuously do, and we'll try and keep in touch with your reports. And look forward to your film, which you showed, which was very gripping, called
The Betrayal of Democracy.
Betrayal of Democracy, and We Will Bend, But We Will Not Break.
I want to thank you again, Mordecai, and again, I just want to say what a precious resource Co-op Radio is in Vancouver, and keep up the great work here.
Thanks, Kevin. That's Kevin Pina, who I've been speaking with. And just to let people know, there'll be a demonstration protesting the coup in Haiti that happened 1 year ago at the end of February. And the demonstration is going to be on the 26th of this month at 1 p.m. It starts at the U.S. consulate, and it'll proceed from there to a Canadian government building.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.